Bruchim Habayim, welcome everybody to the fourth and final shiur in the series that we've been giving throughout the neighborhood in relating to your teenagers. The particular shiur, the last in the series, is going to be designated mostly to answer a question that I was asked all the way at the beginning. Very powerful question, one that some rabbanim in Rosh Yeshiva who heard the tape of the first shiur, this is perhaps the most powerful of all the problems and the most difficult of the nisyonos that we go through now in raising our teenagers. The question is how to deal with it. That's the problem of shemiyah versus re'iyah. That means as follows.
Just a brief review. There are two ways people learn things. One is through intellectual knowledge, intellectual attainment, and the second way is through experience, through sensory input. According to our Torah, sensory input is a much more powerful medium than intellectual input. To the point where the Sefer HaYikrim writes, that the reason why Moshe Rabbeinu waited until he saw the Yidden worshipping the eagle to break the luchos, and didn't break them when Hashem announced to him that the Jews were worshipping the eagle, was because the effect of the Dvar Hashem on Moshe Rabbeinu, the impact that it had on him, when Hashem told him that the Jews were worshipping the eagle, was not nearly as great as when Moshe Rabbeinu saw it with his own eyes. It's not that Moshe didn't believe Hashem. He believed me. When Moshe Rabbeinu spoke to Hashem, spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu believed him not a 90%, not 100%, but 1,000%. But it's different in the effect it has on a person, even though you believe it 1,000%. And therefore, the question we asked at the beginning was, we educate our children through the medium of Shemiyah. We send them to Yeshiva and we teach them Torah. We send the girls to Beis Yankiv and we teach them Torah. We by the Shabbos table, we teach them Torah. The Goyim, the Sitra Achra, the Satan, is trying to pull our children the other way through the medium of Re'iyah. They give them pictures, they give them photographs, they give them experience. They give them fun. How do they sell a product nowadays? They don't go on the television or in the magazine or in the newspaper and say, look, this can opener works wonders, and a picture of a guy opening cans, that's in the olden days. Nowadays, they hire some big shot psychologist and some big shot Madison Avenue magician, a lot of money to try to figure out in 30 seconds which angle the can opener looks the best and which sounds will make the can opener's advertisement more effective. And through sights and through sounds, this is what's schlepping our kids the other way. So we have a big problem. We are outgunned. We are unarmed compared to what they have. The Satan is pulling our children with billboards. The Satan is pulling our children with fashions. The Satan is pulling our children with sights and sounds. They want to turn off their brains and try to cause the children not to be able to think anymore. And every mechanech will tell you, by the Yidden and Lahavdil in the public schools as well, kids don't think anymore. They'll tell you opinions. I feel like this and I feel like that. But to make an analysis of a situation, an objective analysis, not I feel, this is what I think and this is why, A, B, C, D, that's much more difficult for them. They learn through Sesame Street methods or through, I don't want to mention any of our Sesame Street byproducts in the teaching that teaches kids Aleph Beis and various different mitzvahs through cassettes and through videos. But when a kid grows up, what happens is that the Aleph Beis was dancing a jiggle for him, and he grows up and he wants Rav and Abaya to dance a jiggle too. And the Shav Shmaitza doesn't work that way. This is the effect that society is having on our children. And therefore, the question was, how do we combat this? How do we give our children sensory input, Das Torah, as opposed to what they're getting out there on the streets? Because what they're getting out there on the streets is more powerful than anything we have. And again, at the risk of being repetitive, we have to understand that no matter how we teach our children and how receptive they are, we're not as good as Hashem teaching Moshe Rabbeinu. And nevertheless, an imkol zeh, the effect of a picture in Moshe Rabbeinu's eyes was more, had more impact on Moshe Rabbeinu than the Dvar Hashem, because ein adayim shmiya l'ri'ya. So whatever we can pull off in our yeshivas is totally outgunned. So we have to think of more methods, different methods, at home, to try to get our children back on our side. And that's what we're going to do with this evening. First thing is that we have to sensationalize our chinuch that we give to our children. And this is what I mean. There are role models out there for our children, unfortunately. They have the baseball players, and they have the movie stars, and they have all the people lined up by the sutton to try to convince our children that this is normal, and this is cool, and this is fine. And we have our people. And I have no opinion, and I'm certain that nobody's interested in it, if I would have one, about whether these Gedolim cards are good or if they're bad or whatever. But we try to use our Gedolim as role models for our children, and the Sutton is showing them somebody else. You'd be surprised how many Beis Yankov girls and Yeshiva Bacharim, but it's more the Beis Yankov girls, and I'll tell you why in a moment, feel closer or feel pulled more, that's more accurate, they feel the pull of the Sutton's role models more. They feel themselves affected, influenced by the sensation of what's going on out there more than they feel influenced by those people, whose pictures they have hanging on the wall. And one answer to this is because the Gedolim for our children are at best a klisheni, or a klishlishi, or a klirevi, or chamishi. What shaychus do our children really have with their Gedolim? Yes, we'll open up maybe one of these books, the Maggid speaks of something, and we'll look in the index in the back, and we'll point to Briskarov, and we'll tell them a story of Briskarov. And even contemporary Gedolim, we'll tell them a story, we'll hang their picture on the wall. What shaychus do our children really have with them? And this is what I mean, especially the girls. A girl can grow up, become a Rebbetzin, and still have very little connection with those people from whom she is supposed to be yoinik in this world. And so I have a very simple suggestion for all of us. And it'll help your children, sayin gashmis and sayin ruchnis. It'll give them oylem haba and oylem hazeh. Let your children have as much shaychus with your rabbonim and your gedolim as possible. A girl today who I was dealing with, and I want you to know I went through one of the worst experiences of my life, fighting with a family over the life of a girl to the chagrin of her menahel. Her family gave her an ultimatum. This is a girl, a very fine girl, who found herself being schlepped off to Derech because of various different reasons, and the home had nothing to pull her back with. And her family gave her an ultimatum. Say, you either have to change completely, or you're not going to get into that yeshiva. You're not going to get into that Beis Yankov, and your life will be ruined. And the girl doesn't know what to do. She says, I'll try my best, I promise. That's not good enough, they say. Not try your best, we want you to promise success. What do I do, she says to me, Rabbi Shapiro, do I lie to them and tell them, yes, I promise you success? Do I tell them you're giving me an unfair ultimatum? They won't listen. What do I do? So now I told her, it's a very good question. I said, let's call Rav Tom. Let's ask him. Go ahead. It's seven numbers on the dial. That's all it is. And when he answers phones, believe me, he'll be so glad to answer this question for this girl. Imagine the girl comes back to the menahel. Didn't know what to do. So I called Rav Tom. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't our children have access to our Gedolim just like we do? You have a Rav in your shul. Maybe he's a big Talmud Chacham. Do your children have shaychus with him? I tell my balabatim in shul that when the kids have a homework question, that they don't know the answer to. Something that's not just, you know, look it up in the book. Call me. Tell them to call me. I'm no Adam Godel, but I'm the best they got because I'm their rabbi. And sometimes people will come to me with homework questions for an essay or something, and they want something spectacular to hand in. So I remember once, it was also a girl. There's a question about Torah versus Chochmas Chitzonius. She should do a report. I said, fine, let's call Rav Schwab. What better address is there to go to? I said, you talk to him, not me. Tell him you're doing a report on Torah versus Chochmas Chitzonius, and you'd like some information. Best person to go to. She did. And you know what? He spoke to her. And you know what kind of spectacular report, first of all, that girl brought in? And you know what kind of spectacular feeling this girl had? And you know that the next time this girl has a question, now she can call back Rav Schwab and say, hello, remember me? I'm Rachel Leah, Sarah Rivka, whatever. So simple. By Mechiras Chometz every year, a lot of Rabbonim, we all sell our Chometz by Rav Hill David on East 12th Street. 20, 30 people. I always bring my son every year. I introduce him to everybody. And as Edochai Grace, he's what, 11 years old. He's all so full of pride and honor that he came here palsy-wowsy with the Rabbanim. I remember one time I went to speak to Rabbi Hill, my son says, send regards to Rabbi David. There's nothing wrong with that. It's not a gaiva, it's not a lack of covet. On the contrary, this is admiration that kids have for people superior to them. I'm not saying you should make your children pests for our gedolim that have dinei nefashis things to deal with. But you should know, first of all, this is dinei nefashis. Our children, if we're going to use our gedolim as role models, let them really role model. And that's up to us. I remember one of the Rosh Hashivas asked me, and I went to him at the beginning when I started my organization, and I asked him for his help. He said, no problem, I'll help you, I'll write you a letter. He wrote me a letter. And then he says, what else can I do for you? He says, what can I do for you? He didn't have a shul, he was a Rosh Hashiva, so I couldn't tell him to make an appeal. I told him, you know what you can do? I said, if you mask him. I said, let me give you the name of a kid. Once a month, you call up this kid for 4 minutes, once a month, and say, hello, my name is so-and-so, how are you doing? Imagine if it's Rav Palm, imagine if it's Rav El Yishve, imagine if it's Rav Gifta. I'm asking him for 4 minutes a month. A lot less than all the other organizations ask from the Rosh Hashivas. And imagine if you were that kid, walk into yeshiva the next day, a kid who's always been dumped on, a kid who's been told that he's no good, a kid who really has kaichas and potential, but doesn't really believe in it. Imagine how that little kid walks into yeshiva the next day after that phone call. Just imagine. I remember my Zuf Pesach, I went to Lakewood, I always visit the Rosh Hashiva of Malkiel, he was old. We had a lot of shaykhs when I was in Lakewood. And I brought my son with me. My other son isn't a year old yet, so I always speak about this one. I always bring him with me. And we were speaking about a certain topic. And his Rebbe just yesterday brought up this topic. Well, some things, semi-political, semi-hashkafadik, you know, depends how you look at it. And the Rebbe said this and this, and it was big tumult in the class, half of the class said this, half of the class said that. And my son tells the Rebbe, I was by the Reshiva of Lakewood. And the Reshiva of Lakewood said this and this. The Rebbe didn't believe him. Rebbe Mamish did not believe him. Now, besides, he was telling the truth. Why shouldn't the Rebbe believe him? He was there. Do you know what that means to a kid? And do you know that that's going to stay by a kid for the rest of his life? A little 10, 11-year-old kid? The greatest person that you know, whoever he may be, in any way, oifen, possible, as much as possible, let your children have a shaychus. If your child has a shail in halacha that you don't know, don't say, okay, I'll find out for you. Let him find out. Let him call your Rav. Or if he has a shaila, he's torn, he doesn't know what he should be when he grows up, some hashkafa issue. You don't have to speak to your Rosh Hashiva about it. Let your son speak to your Rosh Hashiva about it. I'm telling you, 99% of the time, depends on the personality of the particular Rosh Hashiva we're talking about, but I've done this, 99% of the time, the Shivas will be more than happy. And you don't know what it means for a kid. Walk into the yeshiva. And then, when you say something about a gadol, they relate to it. It's not just intellectual knowledge anymore. They know something about somebody. Personally. They think that on their small level they have some sort of shaykha, some sort of relationship. And as much as possible they should have. There's no such thing as, well, I'm enough for my kids, or the Rebbe's enough, or this is enough. We tend to think that way. A little kid, what does he need? The Rebbe's enough, the Menahel is enough, the father's enough, the local rabbi's enough. And they get to Olam Haba, and they'll say that, when they say, well, I could have aspired to be an Adam Gadol, but I didn't, Hashem will say, this Chelek in Gan Eden, that's enough. And we'll see how sufridin they are them, and how sufridin you are them. There's no such thing as enough. As much as possible. And it's a necessity now, because it's not enough. Because the big movie stars are what you have to compete with. And the big baseball players are what you have to compete with. And the people in the billboards are what you have to compete with. How many Beis Yaakov girls have the pictures of the movie stars on their wall? The parents allow it. How many yeshiva bacharim have these things also posted on their wall? And who are their role models? And we speak about role models all the time. By every convention, by every asifa, role models we have to give our children. But how could we give it to them if all the shaykhs they have with this person is by looking at his picture standing on the wall for 20 years? What shaykhs do they have? And it's much more important with girls than with boys. Because boys at least grow up and they have a rish yeshiva. The boys grow up and they have a rav maybe. These people are the Rosh Hashivas and the boys are going to have them sooner or later. We have to make it sooner than later, but the girls won't even have them later. The girls in certain Beis Yaakovs, they give a course like contemporary Gedolim or something like that, and they learn about our Rosh Hashivas the way they learn about the Rambam and the Rajbo, which is fine. What else can you do in school? But if it's your daughter, let her know that these people are hers. V'halachta b'drachav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Melech of the world. B'terem kol yitzir nivra, he's built in nitle b'zulasai. He has no above and beyond anything that happens in the world. But what's the bottom line after we say Adonai Olam, Hashem li, he's mine. That's the greatness of Hashem. No matter how high he is, he's ours, in our pockets, kaviyachol. He listens to every single word we say. People think that our rabbonim are like more inaccessible than Hashem, higher level than Hashem, less shaykh to us than Hashem. It's not so. That's the first etzah. As much as possible, your daughter has a report to do. They all come home from high school with reports to do. Everyone came to me. C-minus girl from a C-minus family in a C-minus world. Nothing terrible yet. Nothing special in one of the schools here in the neighborhood. And once a year, what happens is that each girl gets up to do like a parsha presentation for the rest of the class. And it's marked like a final. It's the climax of the whole year. There's a girl, a movie star girl, a teeny bopper girl, a C-minus girl, a little below average and everything. And she was slipping and sliding. No, we did. We gave her a report. And I'm telling you that her teacher, on the best day, couldn't do half as good. 12 pages, typeset, in Lashon HaKodesh, that the teacher, in what we call, I remember she called her teacher from my office in Babov, I have somebody helping me with my report, but the Hebrew is, he says it's yeshivish Hebrew. Is it okay? Can you read it? And she says, yeah, I have the same problem with my husband. She was like a shtickle Torah that came from Lamdin Otsum, and she understood it. And it was hours and hours. And we got a professional artist to do her artwork. They have to make like a presentation. And we got a typesetter to typeset it. Now they have these computers, but with a fancy cover and fancy binding. And she handed this in. The teacher, for the first time in her life, gave a Aleph plus or a 100. She never gives like a perfect mark. But as soon as she was overwhelmed, this is going to stay with that girl for the rest of her life. This is what I call hit them with a truck. We can no longer afford just to smoothly bring our children through life. Our children have to get a thrill from their successes in Torah. Your children have to see that you care so much about them and about their learning and about their Torah that you're willing to go so far out of the way for them. You know, a father, I live in Far Rockaway. You know, a father, he works in Manhattan. And the kid was an elementary school kid. It was his day to give like the Chumash shiur to his Chumash class, to present the Pasuk. Father took some time off from work and he ran all the way there just to hear his son. And no other father did that. Do you know what that means to a kid? What did it cost him? I guess he's the boss. He was able to do it. It cost him very little. And afterwards he went over to the kid and said, I have to get back to work now. I'll talk to you tonight. He gave him a kiss and left. And the kid and everybody in that room knew that this is a father that cares about this kid's learning. As opposed to the way it usually goes, where a kid by Friday night, by the Shabbos table, brings out his parsha sheets and he starts reading off what's doing, and the father, who's falling asleep halfway, tells him, okay, fine, we'll continue tomorrow. And we'll listen, oh, that's very good. And the Pirkei Avos assignment, wonderful. Yitzig event, fine, let's go back to Astina Sudasa. That gives the kid a message. The kid has to see that his learning is the most important. Not that you're a machshavit. That's not good enough anymore in this world. He has to know that it's more important to you than your life. And he has to see you go out of your way through Eish Umayim for him. And if, Baruch Hashem, there's no reason for you to go through Eish Umayim, find some Eish and some Mayim and go through it for him. Because the kids have to know. This means so much that they'll remember it for the rest of their lives. I told you we had a kid, Yoili. Chassidish family. Yoili makes him about 14, not older. And this kid was going off to Derech, whatever. He was bad in Yeshiva, not bad, he was academically inadequate in Yeshiva, and he wasn't doing well. He got into a group of friends in camp, among whom he was doing well, unfortunately, and people go where they feel they have potential. And she wants to know what to do to boost him up, build him up. And she says, I talk to him a lot, the mother, and I discuss things with him, and I take him out to eat, and blah, blah, and it doesn't work. I said, you know what you do, this is what you do. You're on the right direction, but not far enough. I said, the kid's Rebbe knows about him. He says, yeah, the kid's Rebbe is also tearing his hair out of his head looking for something to do. I said, what you do is make him lava malka in his honor, in your house. If you can afford it, you hire a caterer. You invite all the kids, all his friends. You invite his Rebbe and his Menahel to be the guest speaker. And you hire a guy with a Schmitschik, a one-man band, to play music. For no reason whatsoever except to show the kid that you all love him. Yoili Day. The kid walks in, it may sound strange to you, but I'm telling you that the kid walked in, Matzah Shabbos. They made some tachbula to take him out, whatever. Kid walked in, Matzah Shabbos. There was no feeling the kid ever got in his life like that. His Rebbe from Yeshiva, big Yeshiva, and his Rebbe from all the kids came to speak all about him. It was a different kid. Didn't last long. The effect never lasts long. And the effect of what the Umay Toilam is doing never lasts long either. But it always sinks in and has a lasting effect. You gotta hit the kids with a truck. Individually. You know they have such a thing called family time where the parents and the kids get together to do something, whatever. I have a suggestion. In big families it won't work. But in small families it will. take each kid and spend time with him separately. One day or one week, Reuven, the next day or the next week, Shimon, depending upon how much time you have. And even if they'll only get it once every 4 weeks instead of once every week, the individual attention and the shaychus that the kid will have with the parents will be appreciated much more than four times, and the eichus will make up for the kamas. I've given this suggestion to people, they've done it, and it works. Once a week, if that's what you do, again, big families it can be. But if you have a small family, each kid individually, you talk to him, how was life, what's on your mind, what are you thinking of? It creates such a bond between the parents and the kids, a bond that won't be broken. They're not a group anymore. If you take them all out together, if you spend time with all of them, that's good, it's very good. But it can't be a substitute for the individual attention that a kid has when he's outnumbered by his parents in such time. We have to take an example from what the Mefarshim say is Ahavas Hashem. What's Ahavas Hashem? When we were little kids, we learned this mashal. You're walking down the street, you and your father, and your father looks in a store window, and he says, you know, I like that wallet. He doesn't say anything, and he walks away. And then you go back the next day and you buy it for him. He didn't say he wants it. You just know that he likes it. So you do it, not because you have to, not because he asked, because you know it gives him nachas. That's the Ahavas Hashem. When I was a kid, that's what they taught me. You know Hashem likes something. He didn't ask you to do it. We're talking with Nim Mishur Sadin Ahavas Hashem Avoida. You know he likes this. He didn't ask you for it. He certainly didn't obligate you to do it. But you know Hashem likes it. So you do it for him because you love him. We should take that mashal and apply it to our children. Listen carefully to what your children like and what they want, and what their goals are, and what their problems are. Listen carefully. And don't wait for them to ask you to get them something before you get it. I'm not talking about, you know, if your kid goes down in Manhattan and he sees the Empire State Building and he says, oh, I like that. Some things are beyond our reach. But sometimes there's little things. And it doesn't necessarily have to be some present to buy him. If he says something, he has a problem, something he doesn't like. You hear him make a comment to his friends that his dresser is all smashed. The next day he comes in, or the next week he comes in, and you fixed it. You don't tell him anything. Listen carefully to your children. Find out what they want and what they like. And then do it for them. Not because they asked you, not because you owe them, not because they found the Afikoman. Because you love them. And they'll feel it. Make your children understand that they're more important to you than anybody or anything else in the world. Now, the Kloisenberger Rebbe Zatzal, Kloisenberger Rebbe was just Nifta. There was a man I met, he came to Lakewood. He was a guest speaker, I forgot his name. He was, I think he was the chief rabbi of the Rabbanut, I think in Haifa, or something like there. The man was a baki in Shas and Poiskim. Chosh and Mishpat was his thing. Every Urim Batumim the man knew, with the Simen. And he was a member of the Rabbanut, but he said there's one person from the Charedim. He's a chassid of, and that's the Kloisenberger Rebbe. What happened? Came to the Kloisenberger Rebbe once, and they were talking and learning. And the Kloisenberger Rebbe was Baki in Kol HaTorah Kula Goyin Adya. Big Gvir, somebody like whose name is plastered on the front of the Kloisenberger building in Eretz Yisrael, knocks on the door, and he comes in and says, I have to speak to you, I have an appointment. And the secretary comes in and tells him, this guy's waiting here. So Kloisenberger Rebbe says, tell him to wait, this is more important. I mean, I just came to talk and learning. That's more important than speaking to this guy. He says he can't get over the chshivas of Torah that man had. I'm sure he didn't even think about a Kloisenberger Rebbe. It was just a gut reaction. I'm in the middle of speaking to somebody and learning, and this rich guy wants to give me money. Wait. I'll be with you when I'm done. We have children. We have family. We have businesses. And we have friends. If we're speaking to our kid and our boss calls on a phone, what are we going to do? If one of our good friends call on a phone, are we going to interrupt the kid and say, I'll be back with you? Or are we going to tell a friend, I'm busy talking shtussim with my kids, call back in 15 minutes? makes a very big difference to a kid. Figure he's a kid, you can take advantage of him. He won't be machbid. A friend is an adult, machbid. Won't be machbid. But if you show him that he's more important to you than everything in the world, that's the type of kesher that we need to give our kids, that we're fighting against in the outside world. I remember Reb Shneur Zatzal, I was a bacher in the yeshiva, and Reb Shneur once introduced me to Irving Bunim, Olav HaSholem. And Irving Bunim, everybody knows, was like Askin Hador and very choshev about Abbas, and I believe he was even much older than Reb Shneur. And he tells me this is Irving Bunim, and he did this, and he did that, and that, and this. And then he turns to Irving Bunim, he says, this is Yankel Shapiro, he's a bacher in the yeshiva. But you know what? I heard in his voice that when he said this is a bacher in yeshiva, those words, that meant more to him. That pride that he had, that there's some, a bacher in my yeshiva, that meant more to Reb Shneur than all the stuff that he was telling me about this Mr. Bunim. And he loved Mr. Bunim, and he was machshiv him as much as the way it should be. But a yeshiva bacha, to him, meant so much. You felt it in his voice. You felt it. Now as a kid. What do you think that tells a kid, inspires a kid to grow up to be? A yeshiva man. Talmud Chacham. It's a pity, I don't know how Reb Shneur would say it turned out. But at least the inspiration is there. That inspires a kid. What do you think a kid thinks when you sit down by the Shabbos table or something like that, and you tell your son you have to grow up to be a big Talmud Chacham and a big this and a big that, and then he sees your face light up when you talk about your friend that made a great business deal that week? He sees how excited you are about it. What do you get excited about to him? When you get a new car? Ooh, we got a new car. Don't go near it. You may smudge the paint. Sit out there every day for the first few weeks until it gets very beautiful. And if there's excitement in the house. So we bought a new house. And you should see this house. We just bought a new house. And it has rooms like this. And it has a room for you. And in the basement is beautiful. And it has a chandelier here and there. And you're so excited over it. And when your son comes over to you at home, and he says, I asked the Rebbe Akasha, he couldn't answer. What's your reaction? If you're a good father, you say, oh, I'm so proud of you. But the excitement just felt. It's just not there. Your kids smell what you're excited about, and that inspires them to grow up accordingly. I remember once, I'll tell you, I have this thing where I try to help kids and go out to places where they congregate and where they assemble, and I try to talk to them there on their turf. I take off my jacket and I take off my tie and I try to speak to them. And one time, it was a Motzei Shabbos, I remember, and I was in a pizza store in Manhattan, a kosher pizza store. It was 1 o'clock in the morning and there were people there. This guy walks in, and in the far he looked about 40, but as he got closer you could see he was really older. Short guy, struts in as if he owns the place, with a woman next to him, as mamish over on Gantz Evin Ha'ezer Bavasacha, and in back of them there was this a tag along, some guy with glasses out of the 1950s and long blonde hair that was obviously like the gabbai, and this guy's walking around like this as if he's looking for something. And all of a sudden I hear somebody in the back say, oh my gosh, it's Jackie Mason. Yeah? And then everybody turns around and the place goes into a frenzy. And Jackie Mason, and Jackie Mason, and Jackie Mason, and Jackie Mason. And everybody's running over to him, and Jackie Mason, can I have your autograph? And everybody's like, Nishtoimim. And I remember there was this parents with a kid, and the kid was having what looked to be like a birthday party or something, and the parents had this video, this VCR, and they were taking movies of the kid. Oh, no more. Kid can't compete with this, with Mr. Mason. They take the movie camera and they run over to Mr. Mason. Could you say hi for Dovidal and for everybody? I want to know what would have been if the Chazon Ish would have walked in today. What would have been if Rav Shach would have walked down the street? And these are parents and kids. Were they over anything? I'm not postulating on Loisi Chonim. But were they over on anything by doing it? It wasn't an Aveira, but it sent the kids a message. What's the message? This is what excites me. This is what's important. I can tell you, kid, from today till tomorrow, become a Talmid Chacham. But if you become a Friar comedian, I'm going to be more excited over you than if you become a Rosh Hashiva. And no matter what words you tell your kids, your actions speak a million times louder than words. Your home should be a meeting place for the Chachamim. Who do you invite to your home? If you know that there's a Rosh Hashiva in the neighborhood, or there's a Rav in the neighborhood, or somebody in the neighborhood, do you fight for an opportunity to have him spend a meal or spend some time in your house? If you don't, schlep your kids into the room, get on the phone, and then do it and let your kids see. When it comes to the last shir I said, we had a very small turnout of men. I was informed afterwards that I was competing with the Ranger game. And compete with the Ranger game. Great game from 54 years, right? Once in 54 years, like Birkas Hacham already. What does that show to kids? Dancing in the street, people going crazy because of some schkotzim won a hockey game? From people. And what does it show their kids? You go in and where I live in Far Rockaway down Central Avenue, that's like the business strip. In one of the kosher restaurants, there's a sign. We have cable. We could show you the Ranger games and the Nick games. So don't stay home to watch the games or to listen to the games. Come here and you can see them from here. Because we know that that's the most important thing. What does this tell a kid? Forget it, I'm not talking about what you hear from the Rebbeim and Yeshiva and sports and Avodah Zarah and the role models. Forget about that. What are you machshiv? Ish lefi mahaloloi. Hallel means to get excited. Like yale, like hoilulus, but a different form. Hallel means to get excited. A person is judged, a person is touched up by what he gets excited about. Not what he says. Not what he preaches. Not what he does so much as what he gets excited about. And your kids will be able to tell what you get excited about. I said once the story. The Satmar Rebbe with an 8-year-old kid. When an 8-year-old kid came over to Satmar Rebbe with his parents, and there were grapes on a table, and then the Satmar Rebbe says, make a brocha to his guests. And the kid makes a brocha and eats it, and the Satmar Rebbe asks the kid, do you know what a brocha is? 8 years old. And the kid says, sure I know. The Satmar Rebbe asks him, what's a brocha? And he says, medayn te'evishta. You thank Hashem. He's a smart kid. A lot of kids wouldn't know that's what it means. And the Satmar Rebbe says, I want to tell you what a brocha is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was standing there by Pamal Yishol Malo. Around him are all the Malachi Ashores. And Moshe Rabbeinu, and Yaakov Avinu, and Avram Avinu, and everybody sitting there, Batrasim, Roshehim, and Henem, Yizif Hashchina. All of a sudden, up there in Shemayim, Hashem tells them all, and they're all singing, V'shiros M'sashbachos to Hashem. Hashem claps, and he tells them, stop for a second, Shah! There's an 8-year-old kid making a bracha, I have to listen. That's what a bracha is. You could be sure that kid made brachas differently for the rest of his life. When our kids make a bracha, we should listen. When our kids say a Dvar Torah, we should listen. But I don't mean listen. Take the phone off the hook. He comes to you, Tati, I want to tell you what I learned today in Yeshiva. You take the phone off the hook. And you tell your wife, no disturbances until this is over. That's it. And this is the most important thing to you. Not you listening to him and this guy calls okay, whatever, and this guy calls him 20,000 interruptions. And you, by the time your kid's sitting there falling asleep on a chair, trying to crush out his Dvar Torah for you. It has to be the most important thing in the world to him. These are ways that we could try to combat the sensory, the emotionalism that's being shoved on them from outside. One, hit them with a truck. Be spectacular. Show them not that you're machshiv them, but they're the most important thing to you in the world. Mishuga ish haruach, the pasuk says. Be crazy for them. I heard a pshat from Rav Avigdor Miller about why Rivka was chosen to be the mother of Kal Yisrael for a seemingly simple little thing like giving water to camels. A lot of Jews did a lot bigger things. Jews died for Kiddush Hashem. Jews go out of town and sacrifice all the gashmias to learn Torah. What's the big deal about the camels? But it's a very simple pshat. He says there were 10 camels. Did you ever see a camel drink? He says camels don't drink often, but when they do, one camel drinks enough for 30 men. And here you have this little girl, and 10 camels come in out of the desert. That's the equivalent of 300 burly men, an army. And this little girl fed them all. She ran to the well and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. How many times? 300 men. What is that? 600 times? 7? What, each one wants a bucket? So how many hundreds of times did this girl run back and forth to feed these camels? Eliezer Eved Avram saw that this girl is not just machshiv chesed, she's crazy for chesed. We would go looking for shidduch for our sons, and we'd see a girl do this, we'd turn around and run the other way. It's crazy. Teretz says, yeah, everybody's crazy in the world for something. And she was crazy for chesed. She was crazy for chesed. So excited about it. Just wouldn't stop. Pasuk in Hosea, Mishuga ish haruach. That's what we have to be with our kids. Our kids have to know that their tatis and their mommies care about their Torah to such an extent that it means more to them than anything else in the entire world. But you know what? You can't make them believe it unless it's so. And that's the hard part.
10:30 is what? 10 o'clock? Oh, okay.
You can't make them believe it unless it's so. And that's the first thing. And you should know, loving your kids, even in Olam Hazeh, is a big milah. We don't have time for our kids. And by the time we turn around, they're all grown up. And we miss them. When we see them march down to the chuppah, we miss them. It's just a blur in front of our face. Forget about Olam Haba, Rabbi Sai. In Olam Hazeh, for our Olam Hazeh, there is nothing better than having a relationship with your children. I tell people who come to me, these kids, and they want to be happy in life, and they want to get money, and they want to get power, and they want to get fame. They'll run away from their family. The relationship is nothing, because that's what they think will make them happy. I tell them as follows. I say, imagine you were a party goer, a big shot wheeler dealer tycoon in business. Rachmana Litzlan gets sick. Rachas v'sholom. Somebody goes to the doctor and the doctor says, you have a few days left to live. What does this guy want? He has a few days left. What is he going to do with his few days? I don't know. One more party? One more business deal? One more world cruise? And then take the Ben Torah, where the doctor tells him you have a few days left to live. What goes through his mind? Please, Hashem, one more Shabbos with my family. Let me make it. And his life passes him by. It's not his stock portfolio that he sees. It's his wife and his children. It's the most choshevest thing in the world. Olam Hazeh, forget about Olam Haba. And it'll make us happy more than anything. And you know, the Yetzirah is such a meshuginazach. If the Yetzirah would tell us, give up Olam Hazeh, if the Yetzirah would tell us, give up Olam Haba and I'll give you Olam Hazeh. It's a bad deal, but at least it's a deal. And the Yetzer Tov would say, give up Olam Hazeh and I'll give you Olam Haba. It's a good deal. But there's a price to pay, right? There's a hefsid mitzvah. There's a hefsid mitzvah. It's a good deal, but it's hefsid mitzvah. But over here the Yetzer Hara says, I'll make you a deal. I'll take away your Olam Haba if you take away your Olam Hazeh.
And the Eitz HaTov says, I'll give you your Olam Haba if you give yourself Olam Hazeh. It's the biggest Olam Hazeh, the biggest Sefridenkeit satisfaction a person can have, is to have a relationship with his children, but not stama relationship like too many of us have. It has to be, you have to give it your all, like people do in business. You know, the Lakewood of Mashgiach, Reb Nosson Wachvogel, so Zayn Gesund, once went to the Satmar Rebbe, and he asked him, how's a person kind of Yira Shemayim? Nosson's a Bal Musar, and that's their search in this world for Yira Shemayim. So he went to somebody who maybe has more Yira Shemayim than anybody else, and he asked him. So the Satmar Rebbe laughed at him. And Reb Nosson, it's written in his Shmuz, Satmar Rebbe laughed. He says, it says in a Pasuk in Mishlei, Mitzvah Shenika Kesef, the Kamat Mitzvah. And then take the Ben Torah, where the doctor tells him, if you go after Yerushalayim the way people go after money, and you know what that means? He says, you know what people do for money? They leave their families for weeks on end, and they risk their lives sometimes in jobs, and they wake up early in the morning at 6 o'clock in the morning to take the train to Manhattan, and they work the whole day, and they come home and go to sleep early so they can wake up and go to work, and they give their whole life for it, and they'll risk their lives, and they'll do anything for their money. If you tell them there's a buried treasure under the ocean in Hawaii, people will be there. You know what? The Pasuk doesn't say, Satmar Rebbe told them, that then you'll get Yerushalayim. It says, Oz Tovin Yiras Hashem. Then you first understand what it is. Then you first understand it. Afterwards you can worry about getting it. That's what he told Reb Nosson. Then you first understand what it is. We know what people do for money, and we know what people do for covet, and we know what people do for power. Multiply that 1,000 times, and that's what we should be doing for our kids. Not just giving them the yotze given a little time. That's what we should be doing for our kids. I always say to the balabatim, where shalom bayis is concerned, you buy your wife a present, and she opens up the present, and she says, thank you very much. It's a beautiful present. I love it. You failed. She opens up the box, turns to you and says, you know you're crazy? Then you've succeeded. The point is to go out of your way and to do more than you can. Give them more time than you can afford. Spend more than you can afford on them. Give them more koichas than you have. That's what our kids need. They need more than we have. They need to be able to say, after a kid's in trouble and a father makes a solution, he solves it. We need the kid to turn up to the father with a smile. Say, you know, Tati, you're crazy. That would be wonderful. Of course, I don't mean literally. That would be wonderful. The kids tell us thank you. The kids tell us we appreciate you. That's not what we need. We need the kids to say, wow. All this for me? For me? You know why we need that? Because the Satan is doing that. And the Satan gives our kids an injection of what's going on out there. The kids don't say, oh, I appreciate this. The kids are, wow. We have yeshiva bachurim and Beis Yaakov girls that don't even understand what B'nai Torah do for fun. How do they enjoy life? Because everybody there is going, wow. And everybody there is going, thank you, I appreciate it, it's very nice. Our kids have to go, wow. From us. And I must tell you, the yeshivas are not going to do it. I am the greatest supporter of our yeshivas and our Beis Yankovs. Without them, we have nothing. Klal Yisrael is dead. Whenever we have I have an asifa for my organization and I take questions and answers, 99% of the questions are all about what are we going to do about the terrible yeshivas. I always defend the yeshivas. But I must tell you that if you falozach on the yeshivas to bring up your children, and not going to be brought up, they can instill within them something. And maybe, I don't know, but maybe once upon a time it was enough. Today, for sure, it's not. Vaharaya, every PTA, the Rebbe and the parents meet. And the Rebbe complains to the parents, your kid's a terror. And the parents complain to the Rebbe, my kid's a terror. Parents complain to the Rebbe, my kid doesn't do his homework, my kid doesn't do good in school. Rebbe complains to the parents, your kid doesn't do good in school. Zacharias is it. Yeshiva can only go a certain distance. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is throwing back in our laps the laps of the parents so that we don't dare forget that the chinuch of our children is our responsibility. And our children can grow up in yeshiva, and I heard this from Rosh Yeshiva themselves. And if you went to yeshiva, you heard it yourself. But agavdik, you heard about how in yeshiva we teach you how to learn, but we don't teach you the learning, right? You heard how we teach you to make become a lamdan, and then you got to make yourself. Use that and make yourself. Among many other things, what this means is that the yeshiva does not give a complete chinuch, and I'm not criticizing them. All the siyata d'shmaya in the world and fighting all the milchamas Hashem that the yeshivas can, halavai, we should all be zoicha that this should, that they should be successful in this, and there'll be more than koine dechelik in Gan Eden, but it's not enough. The home is the heart of chinuch. There's no question about it, especially bizman hazeh. Bizman hazeh, if your child wants to be a ben Torah, or he wants to be a shlak, or he wants to be an Oivir Avoy Dezorinik, Rachman al Islam, depends more in the home than anywhere else. And that, my computer tells me, is a statistical fact. Because from the hundreds of kids that I've dealt with, those who have had problems come from all sorts of yeshivas and all sorts of Beis Yaakovs. And there is no one type of school that has disproportionately a large amount of this stuff. Except, interesting, by the Hasidim, the girls stay on the derech. By the Hasidim, the girls have, they're much less of a problem than we do by the girls. Much less. Whatever reason. By the boys is lav dafka, by the girls is much less. However, the home, 80% or more of the kids that I've met, and I'm talking a few hundred, it's not a scientific survey of a few thousand, but it's the best that it's the best statistic that I know of. It's the biggest group that I know of. More than 80% had problems with the home. No relationship with the parents. Parents had bad shalom bias. Other types of problems. So what do you see from there? Although the yeshivas and the Beis Yankivs can do a lot, it's drastically important to have a home. And it's up to every single one of us to do that. And there's one more thing, and I really want, and I have to say this, and I wouldn't have said it tonight, but mamish on the way here, I had stomach pains. Because I was dealing with a family, with a girl, and a menahel. And very often, the schools will compromise what's best for your child if it's not best for the school. I'm not saying they have much of a choice always. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. There are compromises that are made by the school. I have a friend who started a yeshiva recently, and his father's a bigger Rosh Yeshiva, kid's a small Rosh Yeshiva. And he wanted to make a yeshiva for the Beis and Gimel students, the mediocre students in yeshiva, not for the Mitzuyanim. And his father told him, don't dare. Because if you start out officially with a name that you're for the fair students, the Beis and Gimel, you only get Dalids and Hays. So in order for your yeshiva to survive, you have to only take in the best students. So tell me, Rabbi, so where does that leave the Beis and the Gimels and the Dalits? Sometimes yeshivas will take them, sometimes they won't. And sometimes they're geared to them and sometimes they're not. And the yeshivas that started off, I have a certain Rosh Yeshiva, he cries about this. He started a yeshiva, it was supposed to be a Kiruv yeshiva for people who are Shvach and Frumkeit. He ended up with a majority of problem kids, of psychopaths in his yeshiva. And he didn't want this yeshiva. But if you say anything, except I have a yeshiva from Mitzuyanim, we parents, it's not the yeshiva's fault. We are choking the yeshivas. Will not give that yeshiva a chance. Every class, there are kids that average 20 or 30, maybe one kid in a class, one kid every two classes. We all had them. We all seen them. And we tell the parents, put them in a different school, a lower level school, where they could gain more. They won't. Well, what's going to be with a shidduch? They'll say they went there, they'll say they went there. And this is the result of Pnei Hador Ki Pnei Kelev. And Rabbi Yisrael Salanta said that Pnei Hador Ki Pnei Kelev means that the leaders are only going to be seemingly leaders. And really the Hamoinam, the Joe average in the streets, is going to be running the show. So to me, you know what this means? To be Melamed Schus on our Gedolim, and they don't need me to be Melamed Schus on, but to reconcile their status with Rabbi Yisrael Salanta's Vort, it means very simple. We control them. Why? Because there was a yeshiva here in Brooklyn that wanted to make a resource room in the yeshiva for our brothers that need the resource room. And the board of directors of Al-Batim wouldn't hear it, because they said the yeshiva is going to get a reputation that they have bachrim in the yeshiva that are, need a resource room. And then the yeshiva is not going to be mitzuyanim anymore. Whose fault is this? The Rosh Yeshiva? What choice does he have? Without his board of directors, he can't do it. And without the parents that are going to send the bachrim to the yeshiva, if the yeshiva never ruins his reputation, it's going to be with the yeshiva. Well, it's going to be my friend's yeshiva for Beis and Gimel students that end up with Dalet and Hay students. Who's controlling these Rosh Yeshiva? They don't have a choice. I once taught 9th grade girls' school. Navi. Departmental. It was my first job I ever got. It was departmental. I'm teaching 9th grade Navi. The curriculum was, the principal told me I should teach Sefer Yeshua and Sefer Melachim Beis for the first year, 9th grade. If you make a cheshbon, it's an average of about a perek a week, two svarim during the year, which is not really the most beneficial curriculum for these girls, obviously. And I asked the principal, I said, why do I have to do this? Is this best for them? And she said, listen, in such and such school, a competing school, they do two svarim in 9th grade. And if we don't do it here, they'll send their kids there. Who's controlling who? What choice do they have? Yeshiva needs money. And how often did a yeshiva go to a gvir and say, I want money for my yeshiva? He says, well, what's your approach? And he tells them this and that. And the gvir says, well, if you do this and if you do that, then I'm asking to give money. And what's the yeshiva supposed to do? Sometimes the yeshivas use their own judgment when to take a stand and when not to. But to a large extent, there are a number of compromises. Just came today from a meeting of Rabbanim. Very interesting horror somebody brought up. There was a kol kore that was spread out from Rabbanim recently about snias. Probably saw it. And in the kol kore, one of the things it says is that a woman should not speak in public for men. It's a halacha. It didn't say it in the kol kore, but if you want, you can learn it out from Birkas HaGoymel. Whatever mahalach you have, a woman benching goymel, the reason why women don't get into the base medrash and bench goymel is because of snias reasons. So making a speech is the same thing. So somebody asked, one of the rabbanim said, the balabatim were coming to him, what about all the graduations from the high schools? The girls get up and make speeches. And then somebody said, by such and such convention, I listened to tapes, there were women speaking for men. Questions and answers, round table, this, whatever you call it. And I was sitting there at a table, about 20, 25 rabbanim. There is no answer. Schools. But what are you going to do? What's a school going to do? If everybody gets together, we can do things. But there are compromises in our chinuch system. I remember once in a girls' school where I taught, the guest of honor, who was giving money by the dinner, had a daughter who was in the 12th grade, a very articulate, bright student. And she got up and spoke. And there were two males teaching in the yeshiva, me and another rabbi. And we said, it's not right. The school said, look, guy wants it. Guy who's giving the money wants it. What are we going to do? And so too, just like a school will sometimes, and again, I'm the greatest defender of the yeshivas. And I'm telling you that it's a tremendous nisyonis that they're under because of we, the Hamoinam, the Kelev that seems to be leading in the front, is giving them. And just like they will do what's best for the yeshiva, even though they sometimes have to compromise, I've seen yeshivas ignore the needs of individual students even when they could have been met because of the reputation that yeshiva will get. Well, we do this for our students, we have this type of students, better nobody should know about this, so we won't deal with the problem. You go to Menahel and you say, look, one of your kids needs help. Sometimes help, sometimes not help, because then it's mefursum what's going on in the school. Sometimes throw the kid out. And I've seen all three happen. What I'm saying is, the Nageya to us is two things. Kadosh Baruch Hu has given in Ikvus of the Mashiach a tremendous amount of power to the Hamoinam, of which we are all the members. We decide where we give our tzedakah money. And we decide where we want to send our kids. If we use that power that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us, for better or for worse, properly, we could really make a change in this world. I heard from a gvir in our neighborhood, Dov Wolowitz. He said this in public by a Lakewood dinner, that he once went to Rav Shach, and he asked Rav Shach, where should he give his tzedakah? And Rav Shach gave him a mashal. I'm going to say it bekitzer. There was a story with the Nachlus Davids, one of the great Achroinim. And in short, what it was that there was this man who had tefillin from his grandfather. I mean, a very beautiful pair of tefillin. And he put it on every single day, and he never missed a day of putting on these grandfather's tefillin, because they had such sentimental value. And he always had his grandfather in Zinin, and all the things his grandfather went through. He was a big Talmud Chacham. One day he found himself in Medinas Hayam, across the seas, without his grandfather's tefillin. And with a heavy heart and tears in his eyes, he had to borrow tefillin from someone else. Nebuch. One day this man gets up to Shemayim, and the Malachim come to him and they say, you, kakafta deloy monach tefillin. Kakafta deloy monach tefillin, which means somebody had never put on tefillin in his life. And then some other Malach comes and says, no, it's not true. One day in his life this man put on tefillin. That day when he was by Medinas Hayam. Because his grandfather's tefillin had a little crack in one of the vavs, because it was so old. And it was puzzle. And one day in his life, this man put on kosher tefillin. And that saved him, happens to be machloikis in the mefarshim, but today we're going with this, that saved him from being a kakafta d'leimonach tefillin. What's the nimshel, said Rav Shach? There are a lot of tzedakahs that are very flashy and look very appealing, and that are very attractive. That's not what we should look for. We should look for what's best and most kosher and most mehudar al pi das Torah. And very often Rav Shach said, it's not the same. And that was his mashal. You can have a big sentimental pair of tefillin with a little slice in the vav, and some average Joe's pair of tefillin that he bought by the local sofer that are kosher, and that'll save your life. We have such power. We, who anyway demand things from our menahelim and our chinuch moistus, we do, whether we like it or not, we do. We decide where to send our kids, we decide where to give our mice some money, we decide for whom to make parlor meetings, or which parlor meetings to go to. This is our decision. What I'm saying is that our children need us collectively to do the best for them. Because the yeshivas can't do more for our children than we expect them to do. If we refuse to send our children to a yeshiva where they will gain the most from, because we are afraid that they will be branded average kids, then those yeshivas will not exist, and our children will not get the most. If we are afraid to create a resource room for the children that need it, because we are afraid that the yeshiva will get a because we will give that yeshiva a reputation through our Lashon Hara and through our Rechilus, we will give that yeshiva, and our shtus, we will give that yeshiva a reputation that it needs a resource room, then they will not have a resource room, and those kids will not get what they need. 30 years ago, 20 years ago even, this was the case with places like Patach, places like that, where there were kids that were not getting what they needed, because the community did not acknowledge the need out of either embarrassment, shame, or whatever, or denial. Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, there are such moistas. It's not enough. The chinuch system that we have, even though we should throw our hands up to Shemayim and thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for it, just like human beings are not perfect, it is not perfect. And just like the biggest tzaddik still has to improve himself and try his best, we still have to try to improve our system and try our best. And we can do it. And the first step is to become aware of what we are doing to harm our own children. Through the way we look at our yeshivas and the reputations we give them and where we send our children. When we straighten that out, it will be a great improvement in the system that we have now. And I'm going to stop here and take questions from the audience on either this topic or any topic that has to do with the general issue of chinuch habonim. The women have a custom to... Did you give them paper, Henry? Yeah. Okay. The women have a custom to write down, because women can't speak for men, therefore the women have a custom to write down the questions on papers and hand them up. Anything from the men? I see women writing. I'm not the machine. Please try to make them as short as possible. Yes, sure. The girl did not yet call Rafam. Girl did not yet call Rafam. This happened today. The girl did not yet call. Yes. I deal with four groups of children. The lowest two groups are kids that are no longer from Mechalei Shabbos, and the bottom of the group are kids who are drug addicts. What we need for these kids is not a yeshiva, because if you get them all together, they feed off each other, and it just becomes a circus and a gang, not a yeshiva. What we need is what the Gemara says. Talmud Sheinoi Hogain, Machziri Noitzei Lemutov, V'yachakach Machnisa Noitzei Lebeis Medrash. We need Kiruv workers, programs for them to deal with them individually, reconcile them with their parents, take care of the problems they have with Frumkeit, get them if they need the psychological help that sometimes they do. Because these children can be rehabilitated. I've seen it happen. I've seen children who are Machalei Shabbos B'Farhesia come back. We don't have the money for such a program. I'm working very hard on it. But again, the system that we have is such that the average balabos would rather have his name on Beis Medrash Gavoya of Lakewood, and I'm using Lakewood because I love the institution, would rather have his name on Beis Medrash Gavoya of Lakewood than have his name on School for Juvenile Delinquents or Program for Juvenile Delinquents. A lot of balabatim would like to be mitzuyonim too, and this is the way they perceive it. I have it in writing from a lot of poiskim that the mitzvah of being makar of the children that went off the derech from our families takes precedence over all the other mitzvahs of kiruv in the world. I wrote up my own theory and I sent it to a lot of poiskim. I sent it to the Badatz in Yerushalayim. I got a letter back from Rav Moshe Sternbach, a whole tshuva. He says 100%. The Tuvia Goldstein, the Debrett Sinarov, others. I could just go on with the list. It's a very easy psak, and it's one that everybody agrees with, that this mitzvah takes precedence over all the other kiruv mitzvahs. I'll give you the reasons. Reason number one is because if you take a public school kid and you make him frum, you did a great chesed to him. But he was a tinik shenishba, and he would not have been punished for what his actions were. If you take a kid that grew up in yeshiva, he's not a tinik shenishba. And what you're saving him from is a lot greater than from what you're saving the public school kid from. Number two, for every kid that's off the derech, you have a family that's in turmoil. Gemara says, Tavros Robotech Beis HaShalodom is worse than Milchemes Goig and Magoig. Imagine if you had Milchemes Goig and Magoig in someone's house. Tavros Ro is worse. So you're doing a chesed for the entire family. And three, we're doing a chesed for ourselves. Because it's a halacha, Shuvas Ma'arit, that if there's robbers robbing cities, the neighboring cities who are not in danger now have to contribute. Because you never know when they'll need it. Same thing over here. being that these children came from all sorts of families, Rahman al-Islan, you don't know where it could pop up. And by creating facilities to help these kids, we are helping ourselves. We are chayiv to do this because you never know, Rahman al-Islan, in whose family this can come up. These three reasons don't apply to the Tinoike Shenishbu. Rav Moshe Sternbach added a different one. The family, that was his. That you're doing your chesed for the family. That was Rav Moshe Sternbach's addition. Other people also gave other additions. These are the basic things. I've dealt with a lot of those kids. There are ways to bring them back. But I can only deal with a certain amount. Tips that I could give is that parents should never throw the kid out of the house unless absolutely necessary. Because statistics show that those kids that do come back are those kids whose parents never gave up on them, never threw them out of the house. Now sometimes there's a shaila of influencing other children, and that you have to ask a das Torah. But if that's not an issue, you should know that it's kemat a death sentence for a kid to throw them out of the house. Because there are kids that get thrown out of the house or leave the house, they don't come back. Parents mistakenly think they give the kid an ultimatum, they'll come back. They won't. They don't need to. There are friends who will take them in. There are ways for kids to live on the street. I've seen kids change in 2-3 weeks from average rebellious kids to mamish street bums because they live on the street, they get into crime. There are people who will take them in. The only thing I can tell you in dealing with a kid like that is give him a lot of love and attention and affection. And try to keep him within mainstream from Yiddishkeit as much as possible. Of course, again, you're going to have to balance him with the influence. That obviously, every case is individual. But we can deal with them, and that's what we need. The parents, if they have a kid like that. One for the parents, if they have a kid like that. Again, it depends on the kid. What they have to do is they have to figure out what exactly is the kid's problem, where he went off. A. Did the kid have a relationship with his parents? Usually the answer is no. Fix that. B, does the kid have a learning problem in school? Very often the problem is yes. The answer is yes. Let the kid live with himself even though he's learning disabled. Does the kid have bad friends? Yes. Why? Is it because he thinks that he's choshev only with these bad friends and he's not choshev with us? If that's the case, then make him choshev with us. And one thing I can say also, the father should walk with that kid in the street with his arm around him and not be ashamed and say, this is my son. I know parents who have kids. The haircut is wrong. You know, the yarmulke isn't in the back, it's in the front. And the father who's a Rebbe or a Machanach is embarrassed and ashamed. And he says, you're embarrassing the family and you're shaming the family. Don't ever say that. There are a lot of things he's doing wrong, but don't say that because it'll backfire. The father should walk with the kid in the street and tell everybody, this is my son. And if you don't like it, it's too bad. There are things, there are ways to say. A Rosh Hashiva told me about a Rebbe that said the wrong thing to a kid once. It's such a great vartz, what this Rosh Hashiva said. It's such a great line. And as a person that went to yeshiva, I appreciate it. But it wasn't the right line for this kid. The kid said, I'm going off the derech, balach gloibnisht. I don't believe. There's no rabbi nishalolim. If that's the kid's problem, there are answers for him. Send him to Rav Avigdor Miller. He deals with these people all the time. You know what the reshiva said? Yadagot. The bachar asked him, how do you know? So the reshiva said, v'asashtet in Rambam. I think it's a great line. I think it's really, really, it says something. But for that kid, that wasn't the approach. The kid went off like she was from Mars. You have to see what the kid's problem is and deal with him on his terms. You understand what I'm saying? Deal with him on his terms. We can't be stubborn and try to show the kids that we know better. It won't work. Deal with him and never be ashamed of him. Anything more than that, you have to deal with it on a case-by-case basis. And if you call me, I'll gladly, if you have somebody in mind, somebody you know, I'll gladly speak to you about it. But basically the idea is that you have to find out what the problem is and deal with it. Stay away from being ashamed of him. try to keep him in mainstream as much as possible and keep him home and reconcile him with his parents. What? Myrit now? You have a minion here. Are we allowed to daven here? Does anybody mind davening here? What? Excuse me? No, I'm talking after they finish. If anybody has any objections or is in a rush, they're davening Myrav downstairs. I'm sure we'll have a minion here. We have. Okay, ladies, please. Could somebody please pass me the ladies' notes? Okay. Does this mean that all tapes with animated characters are not good l'chadchila? I tell you, I could only tell you what the Mechanchim say. The Mechanchim say that there's a very big price to pay with this stuff. The child learns short term, but in the long term, it teaches him that learning is doable without much thinking. I guess it depends on the kid. Generally speaking, there is a danger. I'm not postulating it. I'm telling you that there's a price to pay, and you have to watch out. Is it appropriate for yeshivas to post records of children's past behavior? Hold on one second, please. Is it appropriate for yeshivas to keep past records of children's past behavior and give this information to the new teacher? This is not within my field. I do know that as a teacher, I always appreciate it when the principals fill me in on the kids. As a parent, I probably wouldn't. Most principals don't want to do that because they say that they don't want to give the teacher a preconceived notion about the kid. That's the sheet of most principals. I really don't have an opinion on it. Again, most Menalim think that it's not appropriate. I know that because despite me asking for the records, the Menalim say no. Relaxing family standards of listening to radio wearing denim, for example. Obviously, that's not a question that I can answer for everybody. It depends on the thing. Basically, you have to know which wars to fight and which wars not to fight. You have to know what to push for and what not to push for. And that depends on the individual case. I would be definitely doing a disservice by saying across the board definitely yes or across the board definitely not. My son listens to rock and roll. He wants to stop, but he says he's addicted. What can I do to get him to stop? I have a trick. If he wants to stop, this is what you can do. These rock and roll songs become popular for only one reason. What they do is, when they play them on the radio, let's say they have 30% popular songs and they have some new songs that they want to inculcate you with. So what they'll do is, they'll start playing them between the popular songs, slowly, slowly, so that they become Shigura Befiv and then they eventually become popular. In other words, what I'm saying is that if a kid wakes up, let's say, if somebody would wake up 25 years old and listen to the radio, there's a very good chance he wouldn't like the music. But if he was listening to the radio, even different songs, for a while already, he will already have developed a taste for these particular songs. So in other words, what you do is like this. Get him a tape of his favorite rock and roll group and tell him to listen only to that. Over and over and over again. He'll do it. One tape, over and over and over again. What may happen is that he'll get sick of it. And by the time, it usually takes between 2 and 6 months for a kid to get sick of it. The longer the better. If the kid gets sick of it, he'll turn on the radio. A lot of the songs will be unfamiliar by that time. It'll be a head start for him to exert some willpower then and do it. And the best time to do it is before Sfira, if he doesn't listen to music anyway. So he has that momentum too. The kid will hopefully, it doesn't always work, sometimes it does. The kid will eventually get sick of the music on the tape from hearing it all over and over, and when he turns on the radio, that he will not recognize many of the songs, and that's the best trick that I could tell you. Okay, how do we educate parents to understand what is best for their children according to Das Torah? Something of our organization should be able to coordinate thinking. How can we structure this kind of meaning? I guess the question is, how do we educate parents according to what Das Torah is, and how do we make some structured program to do that? Well, see, I could tell you what Das Ben Adam is, but I can't tell you what Das Torah is unless I heard it from a Das Torah. I could help you with my experiences, I could help you with a little vort here and there, but Das Torah, you'll have to go to Das Torah. And if parents want, I could help arrange. Parents feel they don't need it, but if there are enough parents that feel they do need, I could arrange classes, because Rabbonim have told me that they'd be willing to provide this service for parents that want to learn all about parenting. I can help you as much as I can, and I think that I have what to offer. But if the question is Das Torah, you're going to have to hear it from somebody who is Das Torah. And like I said, there's no reason why you should hear these Gedolim klisheni. You can go to them straight. Okay, there's one more question. That's it. Are there any more questions? We just have one more. Okay, fine. One more question. Should I tell my daughter's principal all that she's involved in? Because if I tell him, then he can help her straighten up, straighten out. That's a tough one. The Menahel that I spoke to today, if it's him, don't. Definitely not. There are those that will, and there are those that won't. You have to know them. And I went to yeshiva, I went to Chaim Berlin for high school. We had a Menahel over there. As far as I understand, he's still Menahel. If it's him, you can tell him, because he'll help. I know cases where he had. For other Menahelim, girls' schools especially, where they won't. They'll say, and they've told it to me, that a Beis Yaakov was not, our school's not made for this type of girl. She needs help, she should go to a different school. I where? There is no place. But it's not made for this school. In such a case, I would advise you, for your daughter's sake, or your son's sake, not to tell the Menahel. And again, I can't predict what your Menahel will do. But if you think that your Menahel will, then don't tell him. Get your daughter or your son somebody else to help him. Let him maybe confide in a teacher, and there you also have to be careful. Because you ask any kid and they'll tell you that there are teachers who they confided in and guidance counselors who they confided in. And the guidance counselor and the teacher went and relayed the information to the Menahel, and I see heads nodding, so I see you've had bad experiences with this. It does happen. A child has to be very careful who they confide in. And you have to be very careful who you confide in, because I've seen Menahelim and teachers take the information and use it for the toiva of the school to the detriment of the individual. Now, if the school, see, there's a story with the Maral Diskin. This I heard from Rav David Cohn. A story Rav David Cohn told me, where a lady who was living with a guy, she was married to a shegetz, called him and asked him, Shaila, does she have to go to the mikveh? Now, the halacha is she should, even if she's living with a guy. So Rav David told her, of course, in a way that wouldn't suggest that he approves of what she's doing, that it would be better for her if she would go to the mikveh. Lady goes to the mikveh, and the mikveh lady recognizes her as somebody who is living with a guy. So she calls Rav David Cohn and says, the guy, she says, don't let her in. He told, don't let her in. I don't know if the lady found out or didn't find out, but his explanation was, and it's really pushit, but we need sometimes people to tell us pushit the things. There was a story with the Maral Diskin, where there was a sheikhet in town, and the sheikhet was getting old, and he came to the Maral Diskin, the people came to the Maral Diskin with advice, what do we do with the sheikhet? He's an erlich sheikhet, but he's getting old and we don't think that he should be around anymore. So the Maral Diskin said, offer him a position as like supervisor of sheikhet. Give him a desk job. Money, maybe even a raise. But get him out of the schlachtois. He did that. And the sheikhet, when he was offered the job, went to the Maral Diskin and said, I need your advice. They offered me this job. Should I take it? And Merle Diskin said, no, you got to be crazy to do that. And when the Shaykhid went back to the Kehillah, they went back to the Merle Diskin and said, what are you playing games? And the Merle Diskin said, listen, I'm obligated, according to the Torah, when somebody comes to me for advice, to give them the best advice that I can for them. And Eitzah Hagenes Loi. For you, this was the best advice. For him, that was the best advice. Well, same thing with David Cohen's case. He it was his comparison to Merle Diskin. If you're asking me as a parent, should you tell the Menahel, I'm telling you, an Eitzah Hagenes Loch, that it's best for you and your daughter not to tell the Menahel if you suspect that the Menahel will use it against your daughter. If the school would ask me, whatever. But best advice for you, you have to take care of your children. Don't say anything to somebody who you think it could be used against you. If there's no more questions, we'll wrap up. Myriv. Good to know. Thank you all for coming. Mm-hmm.